Hi, I'm Gloria and I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here this morning. Like Ann, I feel it a privilege and an honor to be invited to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, and especially to think that somebody thinks that what I have to say is important enough to ask me to come clear across the country is seems ridiculous sometimes when I think about it. Those of you who heard my husband last night have some idea of what my story is like. Did I say I'm Gloria and I'm an alcoholic?
I am. Gloria.
I'll try to share with you today in a general way what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm trying to be like today. I know that there will be lots of people in this room who would identify with the feelings that I experienced as an alcoholic woman, and so that's what I like to try to share is the way that I felt, because I know that sometimes people didn't have the same living circumstances as I did, and I just want to tell you that if you're new, just try to disregard that because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Ann and I had different living situations, and we identify pretty much completely because of our feelings. And I identify with a lot of women in this program, and my life didn't even come anywhere near being what theirs was. And it's the feelings that we share in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the feelings. It's one alcoholic talking to another. A man in our area who's dead now used to say, "The heart speaks and the heart listens." And so I will try to share with you the things that have been in my heart since I've come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and the things that were in my heart before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and your heart will hear it. And if you're new here today, I just hope that you can hear something of the message that I have to share. There are lots of messages, lots of people talking in Alcoholics Anonymous. Actually, the message is the same. We don't have to drink today because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. I can tell you that I can't live without a drink. I can't live without drinking, and I can't live without using drugs. I can't live in reality of myself. But because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, working through the people here, I don't have to drink anymore, and I haven't had to drink for a long time. And I'm able to live in reality today, and I actually prefer living in reality today. I go out of my way sometimes to cut through all the unreality that I see around me and that I've been involved in myself, because I want to live in reality today. I want to live in the truth. My sponsor told me a long time ago that the truth is the only thing that will heal me, that I need to live in the truth, and she told me that God doesn't live in the shadows, and so I must bring everything out into the light, and the truth is the only thing that will come out into the light. And I believe that the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous bring the truth into the light. They do for me anyway. I don't have a real funny story. I don't have a lot of things to tell you about. But I'll just tell you about a girl who was born into an alcoholic home and was sick from the very beginning. I believe that I was sick before I ever took a drink of alcohol. I believe that my reactions to life were sick. I believe that they were my emotions were somehow sick before I ever took a drink. All I needed was alcohol to set the disease in motion. My parents were both alcoholic. They both died from the disease of alcoholism. My father died when I was six. He was 34 years old, and I was six. And my mother died when I was about 24. I kind of blocked that period of time out of my life, but as far as I can figure it out, I was about 24, and she was about 50. And I, as soon as my father died, my mother married another alcoholic. And so I knew what drinking looked like. I knew about the things that go on in an alcoholic home. What I didn't know was that the people that lived there were sick. I thought that they were bad, and I thought that I was bad, and there was something wrong with me to be part of any of this. And I had a family who was very strictly religious and on one side, And they insisted on sending me to a church school that was real little. It was like a small town, and it was real strict, and everything was a sin. And I, of course, compared myself to the other little kids in that school, and of course I came up the loser. I came up bad. And school became a very painful experience for me. I hated to go to school. I just sat there completely self-obsessed, completely thinking about what they were thinking about me and how did I look to everybody else and how bad I was. My sponsor told me a long time ago that being self-obsessed doesn't mean necessarily that you think well of yourself. It just means that you think of yourself all the time. And that's what I did. I was always just concentrating on myself and how bad I had it and poor me and why me and just things like that. I was a real grim, morbid, negative little kid. I just got here like that. I don't have any other explanation for it. I mean, I was just weird. And my games, I mean, I'm still not real, just all-American apple pie type girl, but I'm a lot better than I used to be, believe me. I mean, I was an only child, and the things that I did with my time, the way I spent my time was a little strange, I think. I spent a lot of time in the movies, and that was a good way for me to escape reality. And my favorite characters in the movies were always gangsters. I never wanted to grow up and marry a doctor or a lawyer or play house or do any of that kind of thing. I wanted to grow up and marry a gangster. They were more exciting to me. And so I used to dream of the day when I could grow up and go out and be like these women that I saw in the movies and go out to the glamorous nightclubs and dress in glamorous clothes and hang out with these big gangsters and all that kind of stuff. That was in my mind. That was like a childhood dream. I mean, it just seems ridiculous to me now, but that's the way I was. And these little boys in this church school certainly didn't live up to the standards that I had for little boys. I had a cousin who went to public school, and he was exciting to me, and all the boys he ran around with were exciting to me just because they went to public school, and also they were what I thought were gangsters. They wore leather jackets and had long hair, and they stole hubcaps, and they were a big deal as far as I was concerned. And they came from homes much like mine, and so when they came to visit, I didn't have to be ashamed. I didn't have to worry about if my stepfather was drunk, what kind of a scene he'd cause, because I knew these boys would kind of understand. And so these boys became my best friends. They became my heroes. They came to be like brothers to me. And I made a couple of decisions about the time that I was 11 or 12 years old. One of them was that if I can't be good, I'm going to be bad, and that's the way that I lived my life until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I found out that I could get a lot more attention by being bad. I could shock people. And the other thing was that I decided that I was going to quit trying to be like the other little girls in this church school that I went to. It seemed hopeless to me. I decided I was never going to measure up to what they were, and so I was just going to hang out with the boys. And that's the way I lived until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I came to this program hating women. I hated women. I wanted nothing to do with women. And today I look back on that and I know that it was just because I didn't feel like I had whatever it was you had, I didn't have it. And I was jealous and resentful of you and afraid of you. And so I just decided to hate you. And one of the things that's been given to me, one of the unexpected gifts of this program for me, is that I have come to love the alcoholic woman very much. My most favorite thing to do today is to spend time sharing with an alcoholic woman on a one-to-one basis. All the other activities that I've had in the program are, they've been fun, and they're, you know, coming, flying out and talking like this is fun, except for the talking part. It's great being asked and meeting people and doing all that stuff, but getting to the podium isn't exactly my idea of a good time. It's scary. I'm afraid. I don't like to talk in front of people, and it just makes me afraid. Anyway, none of that matters. What does matter is that I want to say to the women in this room who feel like you're never going to be able to reach out and you're never going to be able to be close to the other women, just hang in there and practice the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you'll find yourself one day caring very much for the alcoholic woman. You'll find yourself with some really, really precious friendships, and you'll feel yourself being useful to the woman who comes in the room who identifies herself as a newcomer. That's what's happened to me, and I didn't even expect that to happen. It just happens. The women in this program are very important to me. They've taught me how to be a woman. They've taught me how to be at ease with my own womanhood. And like I say, the friendships, the women, the friendships that I've made are like some of them are like children to me, like they're my own daughters. And some of them have been like sisters, and some of them have been like mothers. Like I say, I'm an only child, and most of my family's dead, and these people have become my family. And it's very important to me. And it's going to be important to you. I know that there's got to be some woman sitting in this room today who feels alone. I know when I first got to AA, I felt like it looked like everybody went to school together, you know, and they'd all known each other all their lives. And I thought, God, how am I ever going to get to know these people? They're not going to like me if they do know me. And it happens. Believe me, it just happens. A day at a time. Before long, you find yourself, you know everybody in the room, and you're running around laughing and patting people on the back like they do you, and it's Alcoholics Anonymous. I had my first drink when I was 13 years old, and like I say, I was ready. It wasn't any big revelation to me. I just was ready. Some boys that I knew, I went for a ride one night. It happened to be Christmas Eve, and I went for a ride with these guys. They weren't the ones that they weren't my close friends, but I knew them slightly. And I got in the car with them, and we started drinking. I don't know how many I had that night before I began to experience a feeling that was to keep me in bondage for the next 16 years of my life. The book says that alcoholics drink for the effect produced by alcohol. And the effect that alcohol produced in me that night was this feeling of this ability to not care. I didn't care if I was bad and crazy and wild like everybody said I was. I didn't care if my mother was home drunk getting beat up. I just didn't care. I didn't care if it was Christmas. I didn't care. And the next morning I came to, and I was in the back seat of an abandoned car. And the effects of the alcohol had worn off, and I was once again myself. And I cared very much. I was more afraid and more ashamed and more guilty than I'd ever been in my life. But I knew I was an alcoholic from that first day. I remember knowing someplace deep down inside me that I had found something that would allow me to be somebody other than who I thought I was. And from that day on, I became willing to pay any price to experience that feeling. It didn't matter what I had to do. Of course, I didn't realize how big the price was going to get. You know, the price gets larger and larger and larger. And if anybody would have told me the life that I was headed for, I don't know much about alcohol prevention or educating the young about alcoholism. I never would have believed. If anybody would have tried to tell me where I was headed, I wouldn't have believed it. I would have known that I was different, and that I would certainly never act like that. And I can assure you, I acted like that and more. I left that church school, and I enrolled in a public school, and I was very seldom there. From that time on, I hardly went to school at all. And I ran around, ran the streets wild, just trying to find something to put inside me so that I didn't have to think or feel or care. I hung out in the Pike in Long Beach. Somebody in here told me that he used to hang out there last night. And I just can tell you that that's a place where little girls shouldn't be hanging out. It was a pretty rough place, and that's where I used to hang out with a crowd that was a lot older than myself, and I started using drugs with them, and drugs and alcohol just went hand in hand for me. When I was 15, I decided that I needed to be free, and the best way for me to get free would be to get married, and little did I know. I had been going with a longshoreman for quite a while, and he used to take me over to Wilmington and San Pedro to all those waterfront bars. And when I was under the influence of alcohol, I ran around there and didn't give it a thought. I was afraid of nothing when I was under the influence of alcohol. But sober, I was afraid of everything. And I married this older man. He was 19 and I was 15. And we were going to live happily ever after, except that he wanted me to stay home and be Susie Homemaker, and he was going to keep going out having all this fun, and I didn't like that idea, but I didn't think I had any choice. So I tried to do what he wanted me to do. I tried to be a housewife and do all those things, and I didn't know how to do anything. I didn't know how to take care of myself, and I was just sort of paralyzed with fear all the time. You know, I had a lot of opportunities to do better things with my life. I didn't have to get married when I was 15. I didn't have to run the streets. I could have had an education. I could have had a good home to live in. I could have had a lot of things. I had some choices. It wasn't like these things were just the only way I had to go. But my choice based on what I thought I was, bad and no good and useless and hopeless is what I thought I was. So I just sort of was paralyzed with that, and I just chose to be in places that it looked like people like me, what I thought I was, ought to be. And that's where I hung out. And that marriage lasted 3 years, and towards the end of that time I had a son, and one day I just picked him up and walked out. And I went back to my mother's house, and I started, went over and saw an old friend of mine. He was one of these boys that I had known since I was 11 years old. And he was glad to see me, and I was glad to see him. And we had a good time that night, and we started seeing each other every night after that. And it was good to be together. He seemed to like me just the way I was. He didn't try to regulate my actions. He didn't try to get me not to drink so much or to be quiet or don't do this or don't do that. He just let me be the way I was, and he liked it like that. And today I know that that's what love is. My husband knows how to love people unconditionally, and I wish that I could love like that. I love him like that, but it's not easy for me to love unconditionally. But anyway, we just ran wild. We liked doing the same thing, which was absolutely nothing. We didn't have any. Neither one of us had any goals or aspirations. And we just rode around in his car and did whatever came up. We decided to get married. He hawked his fishing pole for money for a marriage license, and that was our financial inventory at the time. It never got any better, believe me, until we got sober. I got an annulment because I'd been married in Mexico, and we started out. And I didn't want him to work. I was 19 years old, and I was scared to death. And so he didn't work, and pretty soon he just got used to the idea, and he never did go to work. And that was okay with me because money, property, and prestige weren't my thing. I didn't care about anything except having him around me and something to put inside so that I didn't have to think or feel or care. I cared about nothing else. I didn't care about a place to live. I didn't care about clothes. I didn't care about food. Nothing. Nothing mattered to me. Everything was temporary in my life. Everything just seemed temporary and unreal. When they brought my children to me, it didn't seem like they were really going to be mine forever. When we got married, it didn't seem like we were really going to be married, really getting married. I mean, everything just seemed sort of unreal to me. I had played at unreality and fantasy for so many years in my life that everything seemed unreal. Nothing seemed permanent. It all seemed temporary. And you know, I have a hard time today. In January, it'll be 20 years since I had a drink. I'm almost 20 years sober, and I'm getting up there in age, and I've had some permanent things for quite a long time now because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. However, it still is a problem for me, thinking that things are going to really be permanent. And that's just the way it is. You know, I don't know if there's anybody around my time of sobriety worrying about, you know, when are you going to be absolutely normal and absolutely healed and absolutely well. I don't know. Don't ask me. Because as far as I can see, it's a growing process and it just keeps on. As a matter of fact, I think one of the reasons it takes so long to get well is because we keep going backwards. Every once in a while we step back a little bit. I do. My sponsor used to say, it looks like you're going backwards, but you're going forward. So I don't know. Anyway, we started having children. We had a son, and then we had a daughter. And so now I've got three children, and I don't know how to take care of those children. I don't know how to take care of me. I don't know how to take care of anything. Plus, I don't want to take care of anything. I was completely and totally obsessed with the drink of alcohol. And my style of drinking is not the housewife drunk. I never just drank and did the ironing behind closed drapes. I used to wish to God I could drink like that, but I couldn't. Once I take a drink, I'm out of control, and I love bars. I absolutely love to go out to the bars and shoot pool. I never grew up to enjoy those nightclubs that I fantasized about as a child. I never drank out of crystal decanters off of silver trays in beautiful evening gowns like they do in the movies. I drank in a lot of alleys out of a lot of green wine bottles. And I drank in a lot of sleazy bars, and I liked it that way. That's the sleazier the better. That's where I felt that I belonged, and that's where I kept myself. I drank whiskey out of the bottle, and I preferred it that way. I didn't see any point in trying to cutesy it up. I just wanted out. Alcohol took me to oblivion, and that's what I wanted. When alcohol stopped taking me to oblivion, I was given the gift of sobriety, and that's just the way that it was for me. I was in a blackout most of the time when I was drinking. I got to the place, of course, where sobriety was impossible, and I just couldn't even play at being a housewife anymore. I couldn't play at taking care of these kids, and I just started staying gone from the house for days at a time, and I'd go on binges, and I'd stay out for days and at a time, and sometimes I'd be with my husband, and sometimes I wouldn't, and that's just the way that it was. And the times that I wasn't with my husband, of course, were much worse, and I'd have to eventually sober up, and eventually I'd have to come home, and I'd have to face my children and the look in their eyes, and I'd have to face my husband and the look in his eyes, and worse than all of that, I had to face myself. And I had to ask myself once again what it was that kept driving me out onto the streets time after time after time when I said I wouldn't do that anymore. I didn't know that the answer was that I was suffering from a terminal disease. I didn't know I was suffering from an obsession for alcohol. I just thought that I was bad and that I must like living like this or else I wouldn't do it. It must be just what everybody said. Why don't you just straighten up? Well, I didn't know why I didn't straighten up. As my husband said last night, our life was just a series of emergency rooms and courtrooms and jailhouses and doctors and lawyers and social workers and one thing and another. That's just the way that life went for us. We ended up on Skid Row, living in rescue missions and Salvation Armies, and my guilt grew and my shame grew, and I abandoned my children. I just simply abandoned my children, just didn't go back for them. It was over 2 years before we ever went back for our children. We were sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and every sober breath that I drew, I had to think about that, and so I tried not to draw a sober breath very often, and we ended up in Long Beach living in a little wino motel, and my husband went to jail just about this time a year ago last Tuesday. My husband went to jail, and it was going to be different. This time it was going to be different. I was going to show him that I could be good. I just wanted to show him that I could do the right thing for once, and so I wasn't going to drink. I knew I had to not drink, because I knew I had no control. And I was going to keep on working, and I was going to go see him, and I was going to do all the things that I thought I ought to do. And that lasted for about a week. And I came in one night, and I wanted a drink. And when I wanted a drink, I took a drink. That's all there was to it. So I started drinking, and I started running. And I ran into some guys that I'd known before, and they were robbing stores and using heroin, and that's what I started doing with them. The heroin wasn't anything new, but I certainly had never done anything like any of these robberies. And I found myself driving the car for these robberies night after night after night. And I felt more shame and more terror and more confusion than I'd ever felt in my life. And, you know, I look back on that time in my life, and when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought nobody else has ever lived like this. No other woman's ever lived like this, and none of these nice ladies here are going to understand how I felt. And I'm telling you again, the women in this room who are alcoholics know how I felt. They know that kind of desperation and that kind of humiliation and that kind of shame. The women friends that I have tell me they experience those feelings just trying to get to the PTA meeting drunk, just trying to do something in their church or in their school, or the women who did drink behind drawn drapes experience those same feelings of degradation and humiliation. And we're all involved in a common solution here from those feelings, and I thank God for that. I wanted, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I wanted so badly to never have to feel that shame again. And that's one of the gifts that's mine today. I don't walk in shame anymore. I don't feel those feelings that I felt on the streets as an alcoholic woman. I got arrested for these robberies, and they kept me 3 days, and then they let me go because nobody could identify me. They didn't have enough evidence to hold me, and so I was let go. And I didn't have any place to go. It had been years since my family would have anything to do with me. I was sober 4 years before my family ever invited me into their home, and I just took from the world until I wasn't allowed to take anymore, and that's all there was to it. I was a taker. I believed that the world owed me a living. I carried my past around with me like a big heavy sack, my self-pity, my everything. I blamed it on everything. I blamed everything on everybody else, and I just thought the world owed me a living. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, I have been given a perfectly simple solution. For a way to make amends for the way that I lived, through the use of the 12 steps, through the activity in the program, through the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been allowed to give back where I took. It may not have been to the same person, but I've been allowed to give in this program. And so that's why I feel when somebody asks me to do something in AA, I feel like it's kind of a gift. It's kind of a way to give back. If I give a newcomer a ride to a meeting, I sometimes know which one of those people it was, which time it was that I took from somebody. And I know I kind of, a man in our area says it's making amends to the universe. And that's sort of the way that that it works for me. I called my first husband. I didn't have any place to go, and I called my first husband, and he said I could come over if I didn't cause any trouble. And I thought, you know, that really takes a lot of nerve for him to say something like that, since this was all his fault at the time. I went over there, and there was all I wanted to drink, as usual. There was always a lot of alcohol around there, and I started drinking. And I don't know how long I was there. I don't know what happened. I just know that the thing happened to me that I believe happens to every alcoholic who's given the gift of sobriety. And that was, it just simply didn't work for me anymore. It didn't take me to oblivion. It didn't remove all those fears and all that shame. It just didn't work for me anymore. I got sick while I was there. I came down with hepatitis. I'd had it twice before, and the doctors told me if I ever got it again, I'd die. And so I believed that I was dying. I really believed that this was the end for me, and I certainly felt like I was dying. I was very sick. And finally, he said he'd send me up to Harbor General Hospital in a cab, and that's the way it had to be for me. I ended up driving to a county hospital by myself in a taxi cab to die. I thought I was going up there to die. It had been a few years before that time that my mother had died from the disease of alcoholism, and I had happened to be sober at the time, and I stayed with her day and night while she was in that hospital. And I watched. I could see it clearly that day as I drove to that same hospital, and I can see it clearly today, what it looked like for a woman alcoholic to be dying of the disease of alcoholism. It wasn't a pretty sight, and she was scared to death, and she was ashamed, and she was guilty, and she never got relieved of any of that. I have lived to be relieved of those things because of the blessing of Alcoholics Anonymous. My mother died without it. And I stood in the waiting room of Harbor General Hospital that day, and I had on a pair of black Levi's I'd been wearing for a couple of months. I was 29 years old, and as far as I knew, my life was over. I didn't even have an address to put down on the admitting form. And they put me in a room and started doing tests and one thing and another, and they did a biopsy on my liver, and the doctor said that it showed it was so badly damaged that I wouldn't live over 3 years if I kept on going the way I was going, and I wouldn't live over 5 even if I didn't drink anything again. And so I laid awake that night thinking about dying, and I always thought that's what I wanted. I always thought I wanted out. And today I know that was just more self-pity on my part. When it got right down to it, I began to think about what my grandmother taught me as a child about the things that happen to women like me, people who live like I do. And I got absolutely terrified to die, scared to death to die. And I wanted desperately to stay alive, not for any honorable reason, but just simply because I was afraid to die. And I asked God for just one thing that night, and that was to just please let me keep on breathing. And believe me, I was not in the habit of talking to God. That was the last thing I wanted to do was even think about God, because I believed that God was going to give me just what I deserved if I got his attention focused on me. And I knew I deserved the very worst. And so I thought, I won't ask him for anything, and he won't notice me, and I'll be safe. It was just a kind of a childish fear thing that I had. But that night I was desperate, and there was no place else to go. And I believe that every person breathing and walking around on this earth, when it all comes to the end and there's no place else to go, I believe that there's only one place to go, and one place we all will go, and that's back to our Creator. And I... I got that out of the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I talked to God before, long before I ever got to Alcoholics Anonymous, but I didn't know God until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. You have introduced me to a God of my own understanding by your actions more than anything that you've said. The next morning the doctor came into my room and he had a big smile on his face and he seemed pretty happy and joyful and he said, "Well, you're not going to die." He said, "We've made a mistake. That shows you how much we know about the human liver. Ha, ha, ha." And I thought, God, I've spent my night reforming and this guy's made a mistake. Today I know it wasn't a mistake. I know that I believe it was the hand of my God pushing me a little closer to a place where I could surrender to the program when it came my way, and that's exactly what happened. Alcoholics Anonymous walked into my room, sat down in a chair next to my bed, and started talking to me. That's exactly what happened. I had seen AA a lot of times before, but never for myself. It was always with my mother. My mother used to try to get sober in AA, or it was with my husband. I thought he was the one that really needed it. Sobriety, you know, if anybody needed to sober up, it was him. If he'd just sober up, well, I could drink the way I wanted to drink. I told you, I never learned to take responsibility for my own actions until I got to the program, and thank God I ran into some people right away who weren't afraid to tell me the truth. They were not afraid to talk to me about God. They weren't afraid they were going to scare me off, because they knew that if I was going to even just stay alive and stay sober, that I didn't have a chance without a power greater than myself. They believed in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they taught me Alcoholics Anonymous straight out of the big book, exactly the way it's written in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's the way that I try to pass it on today. That's what I believe in today. They told me I could just take the word blame out of my vocabulary, and that really was pretty hard for me, you know, to just surrender to the fact that that I had to take responsibility for me. Anyway, I stayed in the hospital for quite a while, and then and this guy came in and started telling me about the AA meetings. The Harbor Area Institutional Committee had some AA meetings a couple times a week in this hospital, and I didn't want to go. Sobriety was the farthest thing from my mind, and let alone I didn't want to go, especially with this guy. I didn't like him, and I didn't want to have anything to do with him. I just thought he was a pest. Today I think he's an angel. I think he's the first of many angels that have come my way. I happen to like angels a lot. And I was on a retreat one time, and the priest said that angels are messengers of God. And I call this guy the first of many angels that have come my way, because I believe he carried God's message to me. I believe God used him that day. I don't think he's even sober anymore. I don't even know if he's alive. I don't see him anymore, but he used to have a hard time staying sober. But he carried God's message to me. And so I try not to pay too much attention anymore to where the message is coming from. I try to listen to the message and not the messenger. I finally went to a meeting with him, and I sat around a room full of people much like yourselves. I was sitting here before I was asked to come up to the podium and looking at you, and you know, it's the same people, whether it's in California or Florida or wherever it is. You all have the same look in your eyes. When I was new, it looked like everybody kind of had a secret. They kind of have a little something happening in there that they know. And I didn't know that it was just the secret was available to all of us, and it's still available to all of us. Those of you who are new in the room today, the secret is in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. That's where the secret is. I don't know what I heard in those rooms in those first few meetings. I do know that I kept going back to those meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous for exactly the same reason that I kept going back to alcohol, and that was because I liked the way that it felt. Initially, that's the reason I kept going back to the meetings, because I just liked the way it felt in those meetings. I liked it when people put their arms around me and hugged me. I liked it when they gave me the cigarettes that were left over and the leftover cake, and I'd take it back to my room, and I just liked the way it was. It just felt safe and gentle and warm in those AA meetings, and it had been a very long time since I'd been in a place like that. And eventually, I started to hear some things in those meetings. The number one thing that I think allowed me to become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous was said to me by, I don't even know who said it to me. I just think it was very important. I knew it was important then, and I feel it's very important today. Somebody told me that I was not bad, that I was sick. They told me that Alcoholics Anonymous is not a place where bad people come to get good. It's a place where sick people come to get well. And they told me I could get well if I would do the things that are outlined in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And They told me that Alcoholics Anonymous isn't a place for people who need it. It's a place for people who want it, and that all I had to do was want it and that I could have it. And so there came a day when I wanted it very much, and I developed a desire to stay sober. I don't know when exactly that happened. I just know that when it came time for me to leave the hospital, I didn't want to go. And the reason I didn't want to go, it turned out, was that I didn't want to drink anymore. And so they took me over. A man told me that he'd take me to a recovery house, and I could interview with the house mother. And I didn't know anything about a recovery house. I didn't know. I just, they told me it was a house where a few women lived and tried to get well, and they took them to AA meetings while they were getting well. And so I know I was in a state of surrender to consider moving into a house full of women, number one. And however, I kind of knew in the back of my mind that they wouldn't allow me to live in that house. I thought, I'm going to go interview with this lady, and she's going to ask me questions, and I won't have the right answers, and I probably will be turned down, but I went with him anyway. And we got there, and it happened to be a day when she wasn't feeling very good, so they asked me to come into her bedroom, and she was sitting on her bed, and I sat across the room from her, and it was a very simple conversation. She just had a big smile on her face, and she said, "Do you want to come and live with us, honey?" And I said, "Yes, I do." And she said, "Okay, you can move in tomorrow." Just like that. She didn't ask me how much money I had or where I'd been or what my morals were. She didn't ask me anything. I've been thinking a lot about it lately because about this time of year I start thinking about my very early days and how blessed I am to have received this gift of sobriety. And the other day I was thinking, what if this lady would have said, "No, I don't feel good today. I don't want to see anybody. This program is just seconds and inches," is the way that I see it. If this lady wouldn't have seen me that day, I may not have stayed any longer. I may not have come back to see her again. And just everything falls right into place for an alcoholic who's given the gift. We have to see the hand of God moving us around. I believe everybody in this room has been touched by the hand of God. I don't believe that we all just arrived here just on our own volition. I don't think that any of us are that bright to just map out a plan for our lives and get us from where we were to where we are today. I know I'm certainly not. There's no way that I could have been laying in that hospital and figured out how in 20 years I was going to arrive in Fort Walton Beach, Florida with my husband and all this stuff, I mean, there's just no way. I couldn't do it. I can't live without Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't stay sober without my God working through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous for me. Anyway, I moved into that house and I began to see in action the things that I've been hearing about in these meetings. I began to learn about the book. We studied the book every morning and we went to an AA meeting every night, and a couple times a week members of AA that lived in the town and thereabouts would come in and see us. And on Saturday afternoon, we had a women's meeting there, and the women would come in and talk to us. And I became enthralled, fascinated by the women of Alcoholics Anonymous. They came and they sat around with a house full of women who were so sick and just, maybe serious and maybe not. And there they sat looking like everything that I'd always hated. They looked beautiful to me, and they looked soft, and they looked like they had the answers to everything in life. Little did I know that they were just struggling along too, but they had a book that had the answers to everything in life for them, and they were passing that information on. They were taking time out of their busy life to pass that information on to a woman like me. And I began to get hope that maybe someday I could live like these ladies said they lived. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was told that I was a lady when I came through the doors. And they told me that if I would act like a lady, I'd be treated like a lady. And it's been very important to me since I got here to try to act like a lady. And I have been very fortunate to have examples around me to show me how to act. And I knew when I got here that I definitely couldn't keep acting the way that I'd been acting. I couldn't keep living the way that I'd been living, and I didn't want to. I knew that I had to change the way I talked, the way I acted, the way I related to the people around me, the way that I dressed. Everything had to change, or else I wasn't going to be able to stay sober. And these women provided me with an example, and many, many more came after that. And the men around me that I ran into right at the very beginning were so gentle and so kind, and they could see that I was scared to death, that I didn't want to talk to anybody, I didn't trust anybody, I didn't want anybody asking me any questions, and they just simply loved me well. That's the only thing I can tell you. And I got a little lady, one of these women that came into the house, took a special interest in me, and she started quietly talking to me. And she brought me a carton of cigarettes one day, she and her husband. And, of course, I wondered what her game was and what she wanted. And I didn't know that she was just trying to do something for somebody because somebody had done something for her. And that lady became my first sponsor, and she ended up calling me every day. She didn't tell me to call her every day. She just called me every day because she knew that I couldn't call her, and I couldn't have. And she did that for a long time. Maybe a year or so, she called me every day. And if there was anything I needed, she saw to it that I had it. If I needed a ride, if I needed this, she really, really hassled herself and went out of her way to take me to one thing and another. And I'm very grateful for that to this day. I started writing my husband, and I told him where I was and what I was doing, and he told me that he was going to AA in jail. And so for both of us to find it was miraculous. And he wrote me a letter one day and told me that he'd looked in the book, and if I would look in the book on a certain page, I'd find out what my problem was. He'd been kind enough to research my problem. And the house mother told me to write back and tell him to take his own inventory. And life got to be real exciting for me. I got to be actually excited about life, just looking forward to the day. I actually got excited about getting up in the morning, and that was very unusual for me at that point. It's not real exciting right now, but it got real exciting then, and everything was brand new. Everything I saw around me, everything, life was brand new. I was reborn in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous because I was dead for a long, long time. I had nothing when I got here. I walked into that house with a paper sack and 27 cents, and I was empty inside and outside. I had nothing, and Alcoholics Anonymous filled me up with everything that I've got today, everything. And I have a lot today. I have more peace and more faith and more joy and more love and all those good things inside me than I ever dreamed were going to be possible for me. When I got to the place where I thought maybe I might not have to take a drink, I certainly didn't think I was going to get all this good stuff too. I thought it would be like it always had been when I wasn't taking a drink. I thought, well, I may not take a drink, but I'm going to be afraid and I'm going to be guilty and I'm going to be ashamed and all this stuff. And I don't live like that at all anymore. It's been a very long time since I've been ashamed of myself. Very long time since I had to walk down the street and look down at the ground and hug up next to the buildings, just wishing that nobody could see me, that I could just be invisible because I felt so bad about myself. Our program is designed to allow somebody like me to come here and clear away the wreckage of the past, empty out myself, and through the fourth and the fifth step, and walk on. Walk through that archway to freedom that the book talks about. And that's exactly what's happened to me. And it worked the first time, the second time, the third time, all the times that I have gone back through the steps. When worse comes to worse and I have no place else to go, when I am in such pain and such confusion about some sort of situation, I back off, believe me. I come back away from the world and I get my book and I get the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and I get through those steps. Some of those things, of course, you practice the principles every day, but I will pick up a pencil and paper here and there, and I will grab somebody and spend a couple of hours, two or three hours. A couple of months ago, I just spent, I think it was 3-4 hours, clearing away the wreckage of the past and the present. And I don't mean to say that I go back over the same things again. It's just that I don't know anybody that comes to AA and gets sober and doesn't have some things that they need to clear away. I mean, I don't know about you, but I have not acted perfectly since I've been here. I've made a few mistakes, said a few things that I wish I hadn't said, and have to go back and make amends and just sort of regroup. And thank God that our God loves us so much that he gave us this program designed especially for people like us that works real good over and over and over and over. Thank God he wasn't a modern-day God who everything is disposable and plastic. These were made to last, and they aren't disposable. Came time for me to leave that house. My husband came home, and we got a little apartment behind the House of Hope in a little alley back there, a little one-room apartment. They said, don't get too far away, so we didn't get too far away. And we started going to meetings, and we walked the streets of Long Beach together sober for the first time in a very long time. And I didn't know if I could stay sober in that town. I didn't know if I could stay sober with my husband. I thought, you know, people are going to be coming out of the walls trying to get us to get drunk. Nobody ever came and tried to get me to get drunk. Not once in that town. I lived there until a year ago. Well, I lived in some towns around, but anyway, we started experiencing sobriety together, and it was fabulous, and it was wonderful. We got to be about 8 months sober, and my husband said it was time for us to go get our kids back. And at this point, my oldest son still lived with his father. He never did come home till he was 18 years old. And my two youngest were with their grandmother. And he said it was time to go get them. And she said that it was long past time to go get them. And I said it wasn't time at all. I wasn't ready. If anybody would have waited for me to get ready, they'd probably still be there. Because I never did have much confidence in myself as a mother. However, today, all these years later, I can stand up here and freely tell you that I am a good mother today. I also have to tell you it's a lot easier once they grow up and leave the house to be to be a mother. Makes it a lot more simple. But I have all the things, I have all the feelings in my heart that I know all the rest of you who have children feel. And see, that was the big deal for me before, because I thought I didn't feel the way I was supposed to feel. I couldn't allow myself to feel the way I was supposed to feel. I learned a long time ago to shut down my feelings. And if I allow you to love me, I'm going to get used to it and you're going to just disappear. I told you, everything was temporary. I had a hard time even believing that my husband loved me. I remember one time when we were married about 18 years, just really having a problem thinking that he really didn't love me. And here it's come to me by carrying little drunk women to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, by volunteering time in central office, picking up the telephone and answering 12-step calls, by making coffee in a meeting, by talking to people in a meeting, just by having women come into my house, and we used to bring them home to live with us oftentimes, and we did a lot of that when we were new, and until finally my husband's sponsor said we had to quit making our house a 12-step house. I learned to love like that. I didn't know I was learning to love. I thought I was just running away fast, away from a drink of alcohol. I was running away from the street. I didn't know all the things that were going to be mine, all the feelings that were going to be mine by doing what I was told to do. My children, I had a hard time learning how to deal with these children, and I, like I said, I thought I never would, and my sponsor told me I could do anything if I didn't take a drink of alcohol, and I kept the program of Alcoholics Anonymous number one in my life, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous number one in my life. And so that's what I tried to do, and there were lots of times when I had to go to an AA meeting rather than do something that probably a normal mother should have done. And sometimes I regret that, and most of the time I just accept that as what had to be. I was a very sick person when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and it took me a very long time to be able to be comfortable in my home and to spend quiet time in my home and to be what I think women are in their home, and take care of my house and take care of my children. My daughter was the only one. My son didn't come home, like I said, till he was 18, and my youngest son ran away when he was 13, and so that left me just with my little girl, and she's the one that I learned to be a mother with, and it turned into a lot more than that. It turned into to a real friendship, a real relationship with this girl, and we decided that we would do everything we could. We'd keep her as busy as possible so that she wouldn't turn out like me. I would have done anything to keep her from turning out like me. And if there's anybody out there that's got a daughter and you're trying to keep her busy, you might as well save your energy. You can't create You cannot create your child. You can only take care of them and stand by them and love them. And you can't stop what's going to come, I guess. I couldn't. I would have if I could have. She started coming in drunk. She was a cheerleader in a little Christian school, and she was the most perfect child anybody would want to see, and she started coming in drunk. And I knew the boys were drinking and using drugs, but I didn't think she was going to, because I thought I could do something about it. And she ended up living on the streets, and she ended up overdosing, and her heart actually stopped in the hospital one night, and my husband and I were out of town, and until we got back to town, I mean, we left immediately and had to drive in. It took us hours to get there, and until we got there, AA's came and watched over and were there, standing by, waiting to stand by us and standing by her. And then they all filed into this intensive care unit and talked to her, and they did that. Turned out they were going to do that lots of times, stand by her. The people here that we've been sharing with, Ann and Burl and Mark, have been friends to my children and loved my children, and they've loved us and stood by us, and all these times had to happen. All these things had to come, and it took a process of years before any of my children got sober. And I know what it's like to lay there in hell with your heart breaking, wondering if they're going to be dead or alive, if you're going to get a phone call. I know what the people in this room feel like who have children who are out there doing it. And I don't know how what's going to give you comfort, but I know what finally gave me my comfort and my peace. I had to know that there may just come a day when they were going to just die out there drunk. I had to come to that reality. I couldn't say, well, any day now they're going to get sober. I mean, I had to hope and believe that that was possible, but I also had to come to the reality of knowing that maybe that wasn't going to happen. And I had to go on and live my life in Alcoholics Anonymous. Norm Alpha used to talk a lot. He's dead now, and he used to say that we laugh when we're sad, and we cry when we're happy, and we call it Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's the way it was for me. I mean, I showed up in meetings, and I showed up doing things, and I laughed my head off. Sometimes I was hysterical, but I was laughing, and I cried my share too. And people used to ask me, do you just laugh all the time? Are you just happy all the time? No, I wasn't. I wasn't happy at all, but Alcoholics Anonymous meetings made me happy. That was my saving grace, to be able to get in a room full of people like you and feel the happy and see the miracles and have my hope reaffirmed. Anyway, it came a day when they all got sober at Alcoholics Anonymous, and they've all been able to stay sober now. And it's a wonderful blessing. As far as I'm concerned, anything on top of that is just gravy. Anything that goes on, I just have to remember, you know, everything isn't just perfect in our house. You can well imagine. I mean, we don't just sit around like Ozzie and Harriet and all of us have family discussions all the time. We're all very unusual characters, each one of us. We all have our problems and our things, but we have a good life together. We have love in our family because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we have a mutual respect for each other because of this program. My husband respects me today. I'll never forget the first time that I ever noticed the look in my husband's face of disrespect. I don't ever want to forget that day, how I felt. And it's very important to me today. It feels real good to have his respect, and I respect him. And I respect my children today, and they respect me. Out of all the things that have happened, no matter whether they were drunk or sober, they've never treated me disrespectfully. They've always treated me with love, and if they couldn't act right, they just disappeared. And so that's our life today with these children. We sometimes share AA together and go to meetings together, and sometimes we're all doing our own thing. My daughter had a little girl, got married a few years ago, and had a little girl 2 years ago. We just had a little birthday party for her a couple Fridays ago, and she had all the things that we could fit into the room, balloons and one thing and another, and she had a great time, and we have a great time being grandma and grandpa. And I didn't think I was going to ever get to do anything like that. First, because of my own alcoholism, and then because of my daughter's. Alcoholics Anonymous is miraculous. The program works. Look around you and see that the program works. Just just know that the person sitting next to you should be out there dead or out there in pain someplace or something, but we're all sitting here this day. There's a real storm going on outside, and we're all sitting in here sheltered from the storm, but we walk around like that even on sunny days. We're all sheltered from a big storm out there just because of the program called Alcoholics Anonymous. So those of you who are new here today, put out your hand and try to stay close to these people, and one day you'll feel like you've known them all your life, and they'll be the most important people in the world to you. They'll become, two or three of them will rise up out of the crowd that'll become more important than your own family, and you'll do anything for them. You'll know that you'll do anything for them, and that's the way that I feel today, and I feel this gratitude towards Alcoholics Anonymous. I know it's easy to talk about gratitude and quite another to act accordingly, and so I try to do what I'm asked in this program. When I was new, I used to shop in junk stores a lot, and one day I found a little wooden plaque, and it had some keys painted on it, and I don't know what it meant to the person that threw it away, but I know that it's real important to me. I've had it hanging in my house ever since I found it. It says the keys to the kingdom, and it reminds me of that place in the book that says now there's a sense of belonging, of being wanted, needed, and loved. In return for a hangover and a bottle, I've been given the keys to the kingdom. Thank you.